Good morning, listeners and viewers, and welcome to another episode of Disrupt Ed. I'm your host, Ron Stefanski, and this is where we geek out about this ginormously disrupted world. And you know what I'm talking about here. We are talking about a 5G wired, workforce augmented, Web3 immersive, technology interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, pandemic interrupted world of work and learning, where we are seeing change coming at us quickly, broadly, on a scale and scope like we've never seen. And the only way to navigate this from my perspective, and I think it's worked, and I think you'll agree with me, is by getting the disruptors out there, those luminaries, those thought leaders that can help point us north, toward our North Star, toward an understanding of both the challenges and the opportunities inherent in a world that we have never seen as disrupted as it is today. So, this is a guest of enormous talents. I have to tell you, I've been geeking out for a week to talk to Sasha Thackeberry-Voinovich, who is currently the president of SkillsWave, but she is so much more than that. And when you hear her bio, she's just one of the people who gets it because she's been on all sides of it. She's built MOOCs with Gates Grant Foundation, with Gates Foundation grant. She has worked at the community college level. She's worked at the college level at LSU, at the Tri-C's in Cleveland, at National University, and at Southern New Hampshire, where innovation is taking place. So Sasha knows all about this amazing innovation and kicking it up. So, Sasha, I am so delighted to have you on the show this morning. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Well, I am thrilled to be here. Thrilled. And I also have my notepad because I'm going to be learning from you, Ron, and writing down your insights as well.
Well, thank you. I don't know how many I could bring in, but we'll see. I think it's important. You know, you have made a lifelong legendary career out of innovative learning. You know, you have been in it. In the arena, as Teddy Roosevelt says. And I want our listeners and viewers to get a sense of what motivated you to get into learning and then specifically into the innovative area of online education. And kind of walk us through a little bit of your origin story in that regard.
Sure. So there may be a couple of surprises in the origin story. So way back when, I actually, I was a dancer for many, many years, classical ballet and Grand Bass Modern. And I was sort of heading down that track where I might have gone to dance professionally. And then I realized that professional dancers rarely have healthcare and they rarely work 52 weeks out of a year. And so I was in that position that many young adults are, where they're like, gosh, I need a job, right? So at the beginning of my career, I needed a job and I wanted to help people. And so I thought I was going to save the world by teaching arts in the inner city in Cleveland, which I enjoyed for about 5 years. And it was a little bit more challenging than I thought. And I'm a little bit less patient of a person than I thought. I love my children because they're just
two of
them.
I love the self-revelation.
Yes. And that's also matching. That's so relevant today. Matching your skill set, you know, with your passion, with what you're good at. I didn't quite have that match there. So I leveraged the my master's degree in teaching that I had gotten to get more into curriculum development, which led to instructional design, which back in the day actually led to developing and at the time selecting an LMS, getting it on the servers, and designing courses for in-service teachers at an ed tech agency, which then led me to Cuyahoga Community College, where I was their first instructional designer. So that was back in the day where people didn't even know what instructional designers did in higher ed. So a lot of advocacy work, right? A lot of
a great place to do it too in the community college world. I mean, the Tri-C's are just, it's one of the most preeminent two-year systems that we have in the country.
Yes.
I mean, it's not only large, but it's bold, it's innovative. It's a great
yes.
two-year college system.
Oh, absolutely. And when I first went there, Jerry Sue Thornton was the president, and she had been like instrumental in the League for Innovation, had an amazing reputation for innovation in this space, was very forward thinking about online learning. I have gotten to work with the very best at many places. And so that was where I really dove into fully online experiences. We did build the first community college MOOC in the nation.
Right.
We beat another community college by like 4 months, which I didn't realize until afterwards. But it was
and
for development.
And not that you're competitive and not that you keep
no.
score, right?
No, I have no idea what all that is.
Yeah.
No, I never know where we stand. But it was fun. It was gamified back when gamification was like starting to be experimented with.
Yeah.
And it was for developmental education and math, which is a really difficult thing to do at the community college level. And so that was fantastic. And then from there, I got the opportunity to move to Southern New Hampshire University. I led academic technology there, course production and new learning models, which was an experiment with course-based, competency-based education. That was a lot of fun. Did a huge LMS implementation there, got a lot of experience with technology systems, and then decided to move to an R1. Went to Louisiana State University. So they had at the time they had a really, really big push towards online education. So they were sort of a little bit late to the game, even for a state flagship. And so they wanted to accelerate growth in this area. They had 806 students in fully online programs when I started there. And they actually had a mainframe. They may still have a mainframe. I don't know. So yeah, so we had to do literally work with their IT department to program it. Like we had nothing. So I put in the place like Salesforce. Like we had a web team, built a team of instructional designers, like the whole soup to nuts, what you consider to be an OPM. And then we brought on the other LSU institutions one at a time. So we had a lot of data flowing back and forth. So that was just a ton of fun. It was like a 3.5 year immersion class in how to be scrappy and grow fast. And it worked really well. We ended up supporting about 13,000 students across the system by the time
from
I left.
800 over what period of time?
So that was about 3 years, but we didn't launch undergrad until about 18 months in. But all of that was not like those weren't students that I went out and independently recruited, right? Like we had the growth at the flagship, but then there was also growth occurring at LSU Alexandria and LSU Eunice and LSU Shreveport. So we brought all of the support for that together and brought about 150 jobs back to the state of Louisiana, which I was really proud of too. And then I started doing some consulting for National University, went there to lead their instructional design teams while they were moving multiple sort of units together. So they had purchased a for-profit and they were integrating all this stuff. And from there, I went to Pearson, Pearson Online Learning Services, led their design, led their retention. This is taking a lot of time now. And then from there, I went to D2L to lead their education as a benefit solution set. And that was subsequently spun off into a privately held company by our founder, John Baker. And that is the organization that I have the pleasure of leading today as president. And so we're bridging that workforce to education gap. I've been in that space for a really long time. And so it's been a lot of fun. It's been a whirlwind.
It's been, you know, and I think you epitomize that, been there, done that. And I think that's so important in online learning. You know, I was at a Michigan Founders Fund event last night with entrepreneurs, and one of Michigan's foremost entrepreneurs is a gentleman, Doug Song, who started Arbor Network, sold it, and then went on to start Duo Security, which he sold a couple of years ago for $1.2 billion.
With
one of the largest, one of the largest unicorns in the state of Michigan's history. And Doug is such an insightful, funny, interesting person to listen to. And he was talking about entrepreneurs, and it reminded me of something that is part of your story, which is, he said, you know, there are two capabilities I always look for when I'm looking to back an entrepreneurial venture. He said, I look at people who are self-aware and people who bring humility to the equation. And it seems to me, you know, and part of this is off camera, right? We've been having these conversations, but you're not afraid to say, whoops, you know, we messed up here. And, you know, a lot of people can't do that. And in online learning, I think that's the key, right? Because let's be honest, a lot of it over many periods of years was a fail-safe, was a way for people to get certifications, to get to get a degree or a credential of some sort. But it wasn't really fun. It wasn't really learning as learning is possible. And so we've seen the arc of a pretty disrupted story as technology has given us more opportunities to engage the student. But it's also taken people like you to say, hey, guys, dudes, we have got to focus on the learner experience. And so now what I find interesting about the work you're doing at SkillsWay, which is a crazy cool enterprise, is you're kind of playing, you know, to use my Yiddish, you're kind of playing Yentl to, you know, this massive matchmaker between industry and education, where you're going to companies and saying, okay, you want education as a benefit. I mean, I was part of that early scene where I think the two foremost organizations that really ushered in the movement we now describe as education as a benefit were Starbucks with their massive 4-year college play, and then followed by McDonald's, which I get to work in personally, you know, with Lisa Schumacher and her team at McDonald's to build what became Archways to Opportunity, one of the largest workforce brands out there. And so I think about those companies that literally just changed the game. Right. Education prior to that in many corporations was like a pyramid. It was reserved for what we used to call in HR the high pots, the high potential people. And organizations and senior leadership in particular thought of all these massive populations, communities of frontline workers as, you know, they're not going to be around long enough to benefit from anything we do for them. So, you know, we're not going to invest in. And I think suddenly the bells went off, the lights turned on, and people recognized. People, you know, thought leaders like Rob Lauber said, we've got an opportunity to look at 5 million people and start lifting all boats by investing in education for the frontline workers. And that meant, in McDonald's case, things as basic as a high school credential, English as a second language. You know, well before college, a lot of their employees needed more basic help, right? Yep. And so when I think about that movement, you know, what do you think are some of the things that you've learned along the way about the way corporations are really looking at education? I think they've spun it, so now they're looking at their largest community. But what else are you seeing out there? Because you've seen it all. Come on.
Yeah. So I think two things are going on, maybe three things are going on right now that come to mind as the most urgent. So the first is, I guess preamble. So maybe four things. So preamble is, I 100% agree with you that folks have moved beyond the mindscape of selecting a few and investing in executive MBAs, right? Like that's sort of the history of education as a benefit. Part of what has stemmed this, I do believe, is the healthcare crisis in the U.S. and the need to really scale some healthcare workers at scale. And there are some organizations that are doing that and doing that really well. That's something we've intentionally stayed away from at SkillsWave, and I can talk a little bit about that later. But one of the things they're absolutely looking for is, how does that learning translate to business outcomes? Right. So we work a lot with learning and development departments, and that is absolutely one of the primary things. So looking at what the overall ROI is of education benefit programs. It is everything from attracting the right kind of candidates who are growth minded, right? So advertising the fact that you will pay for college, and you see this, you'll walk into stores and you'll see like the, I don't know, that triangular sign that stands up. I don't know what it's called, but it'll say like, come work for us. You know, we'll help pay for college, or variations on a theme. So recruiting, recruiting growth minded individuals. Another one is retention, right? That's a big, big thing is retention, is how long you can keep your people. I was talking to a person from L&D the other day who said, you know, we have to, we absolutely can't hire our way out of this. And people are hiring for, we say skills-based hiring, but then people sort of default to looking at degrees anyways, because it's just sort of easier in a lot of ways. But that, that skills needed for today plus skills needed for tomorrow. And how am I going to make sure that I can hire from within for that? Because if you go outside, this individual was saying it costs her another 25% to hire that skill set externally. And think of how much that costs over, you know, in addition to the recruitment cost, that's just salary. So what does that cost year one? What does that cost year two?
Right.
You develop. Yeah. If you develop it internally.
I think about the early conversations I had with McDonald's, and the numbers are, you know, were simply not sustainable. I mean, they were hiring a million people for an organization that ran with 850,000 people. So their turnover was more than 100%. When you think about the unit costs of those hires, they're talking about $4,000 to $5,000 to recruit them. So they're recruiting complete turnover of the staff. It also doesn't help quality. It also doesn't help advance productivity or any of the measures that businesses typically have. And so that's not sustainable. I remember talking to Rob Lauber and Lisa Schumacher about this, and they were at that time, 10, 12 years ago, spending in excess of $160 million to train people and onboard them. And 90 days after, 40% of them had already gone. And so there weren't, you know, what's interesting about you talking about some of the kind of metrics that have driven your innovation and your practice, you know, metrics weren't really available back then. You know, when when we first talked, I said, how many, you know, we developed the high school completion part of Archways. And I said, how many people have a high school diploma? They didn't know. There was no data on that 12 years ago. And so if you don't know what people don't, you know, don't have, then it's hard to build. But they had, you know, they had a powerful enough data to say, we know certain things. We know that we want to lift people up and we want to change our talent strategy. You know, you talked about retention and recruiting. That's what they were doing. They didn't want to hire someone in a restaurant lifelong. What they wanted to do is be America's best first job, right? So they wanted to give people 3 to 5 years in a restaurant operation, you know, customer facing roles and skills, and then help them take the next step. If they didn't have high school, they got high school. If they didn't, if they already had that, but they wanted to be more language proficient, they could do English under the Archways. Or if they wanted college, they had an opportunity to do college. You know, it's interesting because back in the day when I was going to college, it never occurred to me to look for a company that would pay for it. You know,
never.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now people are actually making their decisions about their education based on employers, because employers have really stepped in and stepped up and leaned into this. And I think that's such a needed benevolence on their part. And it's, you know, and it's self-serving. I mean, we're looking to build a business and grow productivity. So they're investing in that. But I also think it's good because we live in a time where state support for college has eroded, and money for higher education has eroded. And what we're left with is placing a lot more of the financial burden and risk on the learner. And that's, you know, that's why we have a trillion something, you know, student loan issue out there.
Yes, which is terrifying. And there's also not, A lot of folks have said that previous social contract, that if you go to college and you put in the time and you get the degree, that there will sort of be a, if not guaranteed, high likelihood that you will be put on a career path that will be successful for you. And that social contract, in a lot of ways, hasn't borne the test of time. To your point, who's paying for college is changing. But also, I think individuals, traditionally aged individuals going to college, so the 18 to 22-year-old, I do think they're asking the question about the ROI. Now, there's always going to be that type of learner who wants that traditional on-campus experience. Research is absolutely needed. Developing researchers, super important, absolutely. For a lot of folks, that's not what they sort of wanted anyways. And so that question about what value is this going to bring to me after these 4 years? And am I going to end up with $100,000 in debt, or even the average, which is $30,000 in debt, or am I going to be one of the 44 million people that have some college, no degree, right? And so as we look to skills, too, they are changing faster than ever before. Like, I think of the amount of, you were talking about being humble. I'm not sure I'm actually humble, but I am definitely aware of my own continued limitations. So the fact that you have to like continually learn, like even what I know now.
Absolutely. It's such a requirement now. No one thought about that 30, 40 years ago. We got our degrees, we moved on. We got a job, and anything else we learned on the job. You know, Sasha, that brings me to an interesting point. I have so many more questions for you. So what I want to do is take a brief break to those out there, our listening and viewing audience. You've been listening to Sasha Thackaberry Voinovich talking about the changing, disrupted nature of upskilling and education in today's context. What a background to be delivering on this on this promise of innovative learning. So many questions. Let's come back to episode two and tackle some more. Thanks for joining us. Get disrupted with us, but get back here for episode two, okay? Thank you.